Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2013. Lecture 11, delivered on February 19, 2013. The title of this lecture is Time Value of Money.
Today, the time value of money. You, madam. I'm going to give you $100. I can give you $100 today, or I can give you $100 in a year. Which do you want? Now money is worth more than money later. You don't know. Within this year, you don't even know if you'll be alive. You could get hit by a meteorite. Or, you know, you could, I don't know, a lot of things could happen. You could just say, the hell with this business program, I'm going to become a hippie and live by the land and all that. So you'd rather have the money today so you could enjoy it now, because you could be dead in a year. But even if you're not dead in a year, money now is worth more than money later, and that's the whole idea behind the time value of money. You see, I can tell you that I've got the greatest project in the world, and the cash flow is going to be $20 million. Or I got this other silly project that's going to give you $5 million. Which do you want? Well, the $20 million. Until you find out that $20 million payoff is in 50 years, and the payoff from this other project is going to show up in a couple of years. You see, in business, we really don't care how much money there's going to be. We care about when that money is going to happen. And even a little more important than that, and I'll get to this more in a minute here. You see, there's a difference between a plop of money. Here's some money. And money that comes in a stream to you. The modern business model indicates to us, and you'll see this in many ways, and I'll talk about those in just a second here, but in many ways, we really don't care so much about just a chunk of money happening. What we care about is a flow of money. A cash flow means more to us than just a sum of money, a lump sum. So that's why you'll see companies working hard to turn shrink wrap products into subscriptions. So that instead of just having one time, one trick pony, we've got you forever. We just keep pulling the money in. You see that with Microsoft's Office 2013. You don't buy a program anymore. You buy a subscription that you have to renew. This is why we would not want, for example, to cure diabetes. Because I can make a lifestyle, sell you products that you have to buy for the rest of your sorry ass life. Same with cancer. Someday you're going to have prostate cancer. You're going to look really weird. Okay? Scared kids. But, you know, I don't want to cure it. I want to make you so that you have to pay me a money amount all the time, forever and ever and ever. I don't want to teach you how to lose weight and keep it off. I want to teach you how to lose weight and have to pay me because you're afraid you'll be fat again someday. Every month I want you to pay me. You see, that's the idea behind a cash flow. It's going to just keep coming to you. So we have an interest in knowing what the present value. If I can create a product that just brings me money, over and over and over again, every month, every year, whatever, then I say, what is the worth of that to me now? Believe it or not, someday you'll graduate from this wonderful place. And so I really, you know, I would suggest that you get yourself insured. How much are you worth? Can you tell me that? Well, you see, the best way for me to estimate it would be to estimate what the present value of each year's expected income is for you for the rest of your life. Telescope all of those values back to now, and I've got a value for an insurance policy for you. Okay? For you, what? Maybe, could you take a stab? Give me a stab at what you would be worth now. Your future earnings brought back to now. What would it be worth? You got any idea at all? No clue. What would you say, madam? $800,000? Believe it or not, you're going to be worth more than that. And we'll actually find out what you'll be worth. It's interesting because earlier in your life, two factors are playing in. There's going to be more cash flows forward, so I'd have to bring more back. That'll accumulate to a bigger amount of money. But at the same time, there's more risk because, just like I told him over there, you could die before your time. So we have to take in the risk of those cash flows too. And that's why we have to know how to include risk of cash flows in the equation. Let me give you a number. Okay, I'm going to throw one out. It's actuarially in the right ballpark. You, woman, what are you worth now?
Right now?
Yeah, in terms of the present value of your future expected cash flows. By the way, I'm sneaking in our terminology. The present value of your future expected cash flows, what is it? Take a stab. It's north of $800,000. You're undervaluing yourself, really, seriously.
I'm going to say
$500,000. Okay, try it about $10 million. About $10 million. Okay? Now you're saying, well, that's an awful lot of money. You know, but actually it could be about that much. In terms not just of how much you're going to make through your life, but the opportunity cost of not having you around will also come into play. But the average soldier right now has an insurance policy of $6 million. That really ticks a lot of people off because they cut it down from $8 million, which is what it was a few years back. But now, if you're a soldier and you get killed, yeah, we're going to be sad, but $6 million is pretty nice, you know, and I'll buy a Mercedes and remember you. But, yeah, I mean, even with just a grunt's education, there's a lot of money involved in that. And so you see that this has practical value. Getting a pin, even if it's not right, it's in the ballpark of what you are worth now. Someday you'll be married, okay? If you die, your partner foregoes the income stream that came from you. So that's important to know. Other reasons that we want to know this, and a lot of this has to do with, think about a stock. One thing that we really, really care about is the price of a stock versus the value of a stock. In other words, we know that stocks are very close to their true value because of all the forces using all of the information, narrows that gap a lot. But we still know that there are deviations, and we can play those deviations to arbitrage a little profit. You do that enough times at a scale large enough, and you can make a lot of money. So what would be the value of a share of stock? Well, there are two ways you could take it. One would be, what is the present value of the stream of dividend payments that will come in from that stock over the life of the company, which presumably could be forever? So that is one place we could say, okay, the value of the stock per share is the present value of the future expected flow of dividends from. Another part of the story could come like this. Okay, a stock represents owner's claim to the equity of a corporation. So let's talk about the present value of the free cash flows that occur maybe on an annual basis. So we would say, after you've paid all your bills, paid your bonds, interest, and all that, what's left to the shareholders of free cash flow coming to the corporation? Divide that by the number of shares outstanding. There is an estimate of the true intrinsic value of the stock right there. And then we compare that to the price that's trading and say, are they the same? If they're not, there might be a way to arbitrage a profit. So that's where we're going with that here in this. But let's start with a simple matter. Okay. You are a frugal person. You got yourself $1,000 and you're going to put it in the bank for 10 years. You're just going to put it in the bank, not even look at it. In 10 years, you'll say, oh, well, by gosh, I've got money. So how much money do you have? That's a lump sum. The first we'll do are lump sums, and then we'll talk about the annuities, which are streams.
but a lump sum, okay? So you got $1,000. Now I'm going to discount, I'm going to take that forward to the 10th power to represent 10 years. Now we always do 1 plus, because in the world of where what we talk about, we use words and even numbers that really don't mean something in mathematics. One of those is percentages. We have to turn percentages into decimals. In harder core math, physics, chemistry, finance, economics, we have to do one other thing. We have to add one to every number. After you change a number into a, from a percentage to a decimal, you have to add one to it to make it so that it is mathematically usable. So let's say that you are putting this money in the bank at 8% for 10 years. So I would do 1.08 to the 10th power, 1 plus 0.08 to the 10th power, times $1,000. So in this case, that would be 1,000 times 1.08 to the 10th power. And let's see what we come up with as far as, where the hell is my calc? Oh, there it is. Okay. And see what we come up with. And yeah, do follow along with me on these. Some of these, okay, I'm going to tell you the thing here. Some of these, it's easier just to crank it out with the algebra on the calculator. Then there are things that we're going to do in just a little while here. For God's sake, don't use the formula. There are special apps in these calculators that'll do this for you so fast. You're crazy if you try to do it by a formula the way we used to, because we used to make a lot of mistakes that you don't make anymore. Okay, so follow with me. But for this one, just beat it out on the calculator. 1.08. Oh, okay, fine. I'll turn on the calculator. Jeez zooey. Times $1,000, and I come up with, survey says, 2,000. Is there some reason why I'm going blind? I can't even see that. I gotta put on my glasses here. Okay. That comes up to be, and I always check my arithmetic, 2,158.92. There you go. So you've actually more than doubled that money over a period of 10 years in this case. Well, that's useful right there, because we could actually turn this formula around. What I showed you here was that the future value, FV, of a sum of money is the present value of that money times 1 plus the discount rate, the interest rate, to the number of years. That was the formula that I used there. But I could turn this formula around and find a present value of a future amount of money. If I turned it around, I would find that the future value divided by 1 plus the interest rate to the nth power is the present value. And interestingly enough, the present values are actually more important to us than the future values are in many circumstances. Not in all circumstances, but in many circumstances. Because we live in the here and now. And so a lot of times we want to know about now things. And that's why, for example, if I had money that was coming in 5 years and another money that was coming in 7 years, I could turn them both into present money, now money, so that I could compare their values now. That's why this present value is more useful. I'm going to point out something to you here, if you remember this from your dark days of algebra and arithmetic. That's the same thing as saying that the present value is the future value times 1 plus k to the negative nth. You can take a negative power, that's the same as taking divided by. And it's, sometimes it's easier to do it that way, because then you don't have to say divided by and do all the fancy stuff under a denominator bar, under the fraction bar. You can just do it straight up and then raise it to the negative power and you're in business. So now, let's take the problem the other way.
Madam, would you like to have $1 million when you retire? It'd be nice to have $1 million. Well, what would you have to put in the bank now to retire with $1 million? Now, by the time you're ready to retire, they'll let you retire when you're, let's say, 82 years old, okay? Those last 5-10 years of your life, you'll be a greeter at Walmart. You know those people? I walked in there yesterday, hi, and I look around, oh, damn, they're hiring midgets now, geez. Oh, sorry. No, seriously, dude, have you seen some of that stuff? I mean, never mind. Okay. So let's say, okay, you're going to put an amount of money in now. We don't know how much. We have to find that out. But you're going to put it in a savings account that will pay, let's say, 6% annually as long as the money is in there. And you want to know how much you'd have to put in now to take out $1 million in, let's see, you're what, about 20, 21? Damn, woman. Oh, 23. What the hell are you? Oh, okay. Geezer. Oh, 23. Okay, let's say that you retire at, let's say, 72. We'll cut you some slack here because you're getting really old and people don't like you because you scare their kids. So, what the hell? 72 minus 23 would be what? 49 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 49 long, miserable years. 49 years. Okay, so what we're going to say is, okay, in this case, we would say, I want to find what it is worth. If I want $1 million, what is the present value required to earn, to have $1 million in the bank? And let's say our interest rate is 6% here, and it's 49 years. 1 plus 0.06 to the negative 49th power. And I will use the negatives on this from now on because they're just so fast to use. So I can just pound that into my calculator and say, all right, here we go. 1 million times, open parenthesis, well, I don't even need to do that. 1.06 to the negative 49th power. Well, that's not too bad. $57,545.66. That's what you'd have to put in right now in order to have $1 million in that number of years. Now you're saying, well, that's kind of ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. But this gives you a sense of what we call financial planning. One of the most important things is we ask people with, okay, what do you want to retire? How do you want to retire? Do you want to retire and eat cat food? Or do you want to retire and eat Spam? Or do you want to retire and maybe have a decent meal every night? So we find out what their target for their retirement is. And usually they overstate I want to do this, and this. And we show them what would have to happen now and through their life for that. And then they begin to get realistic about what their goals are and what they are willing to sacrifice now to get to their goals later. But this is the beginning of that whole idea of financial planning and retirement. Okay, you're going to have money for your kids to go to school. Your kid was just born. So in 18 years, you're going to have some ungodly amount of money to pay for the kids' education. Like, I'd do that. Work, kid. No. So we can do this kind of an exercise, and we can get a handle on how much is required out of this. Now, there's one more thing that I want to do before I go on. I'm going to tell you a story. So this is future values and present values of lump sums. Yeah.
Is it always going to be compound interest?
Yes, it will be. Simple interest, but there's going to be a compounding trick that I've got to tell you about right now, as a matter of fact, interestingly enough. Now, strangely, you know, it's funny you should ask that because back a long time ago when I was first teaching finance, we did teach simple interest. And I'm not sure even in that time there was really any reason to, because it had gone by the wayside years before. But we still taught it back then. Compound interest, whatever you have in the bank at the beginning of the period, that's what your new interest will be calculated on. So it compounds on itself. But there was an old kind of interest where the interest was always calculated only on the original amount that you put in. That was called simple interest. And it just doesn't exist anymore. And we taught it for a long time after it went out of existence. But there is a trick on compounding. Now, the formula I told you is actually technically right, but I also kind of misled you. I oversimplified it. You see, because I want to explain to you, I'll tell you why this happened first, just to kind of get you an idea of the motivation for the logic. I don't know how much you've heard about economic history. You might have seen some in that video that I had you watch, that I suggested you watch. But back a long time ago, before the 1900s, the world was just, the United States was just insane as far as financial chicanery went. It was just like a wild west of free market, and everyone loves the idea of a free market until they get their asses burned in that kind of a world where there's no regulation. And there really wasn't. And the Federal Reserve was formed to try to bring the financial services industry under control. But unfortunately, we had this period after 1918, sort of called the Roaring Twenties. And it was like you had presidents who just sat back and they just let the let finance go. The banks just went cuckoo with scams and deals and lies and broken promises and belly ups. The middle class and the poor were just being creamed. And even some of the wealthy were being busted by this freewheeling nonsense. Scams were everywhere. It's sort of like the internet now, but they were all over the place. And one of the big things was the pyramid schemes and the promises of ridiculously high interest rates. You'd have banks who would want to compete for your money. So one bank would say 10%. Another bank would say 20%. I'll give you 50% a year if you'll put your money in my bank. I'll give you 100% a year if you'll put your money in my bank. It was just ludicrous. I mean, they'd never be able to pay it off. But of course, as long as they had more people depositing than withdrawing, they kept these pyramid schemes going, like Bernie Madoff did for many years. But the whole idea was that, you know, you just keep people on a hook, promising them the moon, and sooner or later, you know, before everything goes to hell, we'll be moved out with our money to another country where no one will shoot us. It all came to just a grinding halt in the crash of the market in 29. Now, the truth of the matter is that the economy was crumbling at the bottom. Like I said, the middle class and the poor were just getting creamed, especially in the later part of the 20s. But boy, that crash was like a wake-up call. And then there were a couple of other incidents. Just the economy was spiraling downward into a real serious recession that turned into a Great Depression. And add to that, we had an environmental catastrophe out in this part of the country called the Dust Bowl, terrible drought. It was just bad. And in 32, in the elections of 32, the voters just kicked every son of a bitch out who was in any way, shape, or form associated with big business, big banks, moneyed interests. In other words, they kicked out every Republican and they put in a bunch of Democrats. And they led by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who went on to serve four terms as president. Here's the deal. One of the things, there were all kinds of reforms. They didn't mess around. Franklin Roosevelt got right up, said it openly, right in front of the, on radio, he said it. The rich despise me, and I welcome it. I really do. He wanted them. He said, I'm going to crack down. And it wasn't like, well, it has been for the last, since the crisis of 2008, well, we've got to get some reforms done here. It wasn't anything like that. It was a systematic program across the board. The securities industry came under strict regulation under the Securities Act of 1933 and the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. The labor unions were given strength under first the National Industrial Recovery Act, which was shot down by the Supreme Court, Roosevelt went back and said, Supreme Court, you know what? You said it was unconstitutional. I'm looking in here in the Constitution. It doesn't tell me how many Supreme Court justices there are. So I think I'll just appoint a whole pile of them that see it my way. Now, what do you think of that? And so they, the next time around, the National Labor Relations Act, called the Wagner Act of 1935, was found constitutional by the Supreme Court, because essentially Franklin Roosevelt had asked the Supreme Court, who's your daddy? And the Supreme Court said, oh, God, the guy's a bitch. And so they said, okay. Other reforms in other kinds of places, minimum wage was put into effect, and banking was put under serious control. It came to be known as the Glass-Steagall Act. It had many aspects to it, regulation up and down, out the ass. In other words, Federal Reserve, you fell down on the job. Here, we're going to give you some more laws, and we're also going to take some of your authority away and give it to regulators who can kick ass. And in this Glass-Steagall, which, by the way, was repealed in 1999, interestingly enough, Glass-Steagall, one of its provisions was this. No bank on a passbook savings account can pay in excess of 5.25% a year. Now, whenever I say a percentage, I am giving you the percentage annually, assuming, unless I would say differently. Everything is always annual. Okay, so this put no banks, you can't just game each other and lie about how much you're going to pay. You all have a cap. Now, the truth of the matter is, prevailing supply and demand dynamics were pointing to interest rates at that time that were considerably less than that. But this was essentially the market cap. You can't offer more than this ever, ever to a customer with a passbook savings account. Well, as time went on, interestingly enough, and this happens with regulations, is that the regulations don't stay up with market conditions. And it got to the point where 5.25% wasn't enough to keep depositors, because there were other types of financial products of similar risk that were not under Glass-Steagall that could be offered at higher interest rates, just because higher interest rates were prevailing. And so the banks were in kind of a bad situation here, because they were seeing a drainage of funds coming out. So here's the trick that they did. They looked at the regulations and they said, well, you know, it doesn't tell how we compound. In other words, this just says that if you're compounding every year, calculating the interest for the next period based upon how much total is in the account, it's 5.25%, but it doesn't say how often we can look at and recalculate the amount that's in the account. And so they started using compounding that was more than annually. So the formula became, the actual formula that I want you to keep in your pocket would be this one. The future value is a present value times 1 plus the annual interest rate divided by the number of compoundings per year to the number of compoundings per year times the number of years. So this would be D times N would be the total number of compoundings over the life of the product. And K over D would be the periodic interest rate. So in other words, if I said semi-annually, you would put a 2 for the D. So it would be the interest rate divided by 2, and the power would be 2 times the number of years. Semi-annual would be 2. Okay, what would quarterly be?
4 times.
Yeah, that one's not bad. Okay, monthly. Woman, monthly. What would be monthly? 12, yes. How about, and this one, okay, weekly. You too? I've had people, I did weekly on an exam last year, and so, more than a few people. How many weeks are in a year? How many?
Oh, 52.
Dear God, yes. What? That was foam on my mouth. Okay.
Oh,
Now, how about bi-weekly? Bi-weekly. Do you know that? Do you know that one? Yeah, it would be every other week, 26. You know, no, bi-weekly doesn't mean you go to a Metro bar every 2 weeks. Okay, it's okay. Cripe, I don't even know why I bother with you people. Anyway, okay. But the bi would mean, like, bi-monthly would be every 2 months. Quarterly would be four, and all that kind of stuff. So here's one. How about daily compounding? Daily. 365? I'm going to tell you something. Now, 365, actually, old school, you would put a 365 as the D in that little denominator there, but you would put 365 as the D in the exponent. You would put 360 as the D in the denominator. You know why you would put 360 down there? Why they did it that way? Because there were five bankers' holidays a year. It was also a way to make it actually expand because the 365 and the exponent made it bigger, and the 360 down here made the thing that was taking it to bigger. It was also because 360, back in the day before calculators, there was a math trick, an arithmetic trick, that made it really easy to divide by 360. 365 is a pain in the backside, but for 360 is actually, there's a trick to do it. That's the real reason, I think. But they always say, well, you put 360 down there because there are 360 banking days, and you just keep the 365 up there. But one way or the other, I won't hold you to that. Most modern textbooks don't even know that story, so they just say 365 both places. But let me show you what the idea was. Suppose that we had just plain old annual compounding. And so that would mean the D is 1. And let's say that we've got an amount of money. You're going to put in the bank $100. Okay? And so let's see what happens to this 5.25%. So in the first scenario, future value would be $100 times 1 plus 0.0525 over 1 to the 1. And let's do it for 10 years, okay? 10 years. 1 times 10. Okay, so what would happen then if you did that one? If I look at that bright light long enough when I look away from it, I'm dead blind. That's why I can't see anything. 100 times 1.0525 to the 10th power, and you get $170. Okay? And what? 81 cents? Well, let's try it semi-annually. Let's see what happens if you do it semi-annual. The future value in that case would be 100 times 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 2. So the periodic interest rate, the 6-month interest rate, would be 0.0525 divided by 2. But there would then be 2 times 10, 20 compounding periods. If you pull that one off, you get 1.0525, whoops. 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 2, raise that to the 20th power times 100. Oh, my ass, what did I do wrong there? Times 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 2, close the parentheses, to the 2 times 10, close the parentheses. Did I do the one on top there wrong or something? 166, yeah, I see it. 166, $166. This one comes up to be about $168. Let's do quarterly. the future value would be 100 times 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4. So that'd be the interest rate every quarter, 5.25% divided by 4, to the 4 times 10. Okay, you hammer that one out, 100 times the quantity 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4, close parentheses, to the 40th power. And it comes up to be 168. This one came out to be a little less than 168. It came up to be 167.90. Let me write the exact number down. 167.90. This one comes up to be 168.47. So what you see happening is that effectively compounding more than once a year is causing you to earn more money. So the banks could say, we're sticking with 5.25%, but because we are compounding more than once a year, the effective rate is above that. Now, here's the formula for the effective rate. And I'll tell you about this in just a second, why this is useful. The effective rate is actually an easy calculation. All you do is take 1 plus the stated interest rate, the APR, as they call it in contracts, divided by D, the number of compoundings, and then just raise that to the Dth power, and then subtract the 1 back off again. And again, in under law, under state laws, and even under, I believe, federal law, but under state law with contracts where you are borrowing money or you are saving money, it is required that not only do you disclose the annual percentage rate, the APR, but you also have to disclose the effective rate, which is comes from this calculation. So in this case, if I were to do that, I would do, let's take it for quarterly. The quarterly effective would be 1 plus 0.0525 over 4 to the 4th power. So in that case, it would be 1 plus 0.0525 to the 4th power. Try that. Why am I having such a hard time? I can't see. 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4, close the parentheses, and then raise that to the 4th power, minus 1, and that comes up to be 5.35%. Oops, minus 1. Let me write minus 1 there. And that's 5.35%. Remember, turn it back into a decimal to report it. 5.35%. So you see what has happened in this regard is that the banks could stay within the letter of the law, but then they had this way that they could bring their actual effective rate above the 5.25% statutory cap. And it can get to the point where you have quarterly, monthly, weekly, daily. There's actually even a formula, it's not the same formula, for compounding that is instantaneous. In other words, you're compounding at the speed of light or whatever it is. But I don't hold you to that one, and you won't probably ever see that unless you've got a lot of money. Then you might see instantaneous compounding. But for all intents and purposes, the formulas, again, and I'm just going to write them down here for you. Future value is the present value times 1 plus K, the annual rate, APR, over D, the number of compoundings, to the D times N. Now make sure you put that in parentheses if you do it out on the calculator to the d times n. Now, turning it around to get a present value, the present value would be the future value times 1 plus k over d to the negative d times n. So those are the two lump sum formulas. In other words, if there's just a plop of money, that's how you calculate it. It's really fast if you don't make a mistake on your calculator like I did on that one, because I didn't put the parentheses in there. And again, make sure you put this in parentheses when you do it. And don't forget, in the effective rate formula, just so you can get it summarized in your notes, will be 1 plus the annual APR over D to the dth power minus 1. And then you got to turn it into, I should write right here, times 100% to make sure you turn it back into a percentage to report. Those are the two lump sum formulas. Now, these lump sums are actually useful because it can allow you to know, well, how much will I have to put in now? Just one big amount of money to get a certain amount out later. But the problem with that is that realistically, as I told you, the world is usually made of a stream of money. Now, you can get into some really weird stuff with, well, you get $100 next year, $500 a year after that, $200 after that. That's where we get into project analysis, where you have this unlevel amount of money moving on you. But we don't have to worry too much about that for now. There are ways to deal with that later. If it's a stream of money, we oftentimes use the term annuity. In other words, every year you're going to get a certain amount of money. That is an annuity. Now, the ones that we're interested in right away are the ones that are called level annuities. In other words, the same amount is going to come to you every year or every 6 months or every month or whatever. Or you're going to pay out a certain amount in a level fashion. This is where it gets to be useful to you, because this is where we find out how we calculate payments on loans. So that if you wanted to buy a car, and now you knew the price of the car, and you knew that was what you needed to borrow, there you go. Now you have the way to find the payment, and that's what we're going to do here. The same thing is true if you were planning for your retirement or some big event. What would you have to put in every month or every year so that you could hit your goal down the road, the same amount of money? So this is why we care a lot about level annuities. So an annuity, a level annuity, or any annuity, works in such a way that there is a time stream of money. We call it the cash flow stream. Goes out in a periodic fashion, and if it's level, the same amount of money would be going every year. The typical ordinary annuity will be when the cash flow occurs at the end of every period. Ordinary at the end. Most of the ones that we work with in the real world are ordinaries. The cash flows occur at the end of each period. Whether it's a future value or a present value, it doesn't matter. It's when the time of the flow hits. The alternative is called an annuity due. An annuity due is an annuity where the cash flow components occur at the beginning of each period. So in other words, if you took out a loan to get a great car and they said, all right, your first payment is due a month from now, you'd be talking about an annuity that was ordinary. If you were talking about a payment that you got to pay us to our first payment right here when you sign the contract, you would be dealing with an annuity due. Now, you can see almost never would that happen. So, for the most part, in the RW, the real world, you're going to have an ordinary annuity. Although, once in a while, one catches you off guard that there is an annuity due. You had an annuity due, so don't just discount that happening. But for the most part, there are annuities due. So now we have to go down to, well, where would you use these? There's a lot of places that you would use these. And I'm going to, I got a secret I got to tell you, okay? You're going to buy a lottery ticket tonight. Super jumbo, you know, big butt lottery. You're going to win. Oh, yes, you are going to win big. You're going to win $20 million tonight after taxes. Yes, it's your lucky day. Now, here's the interesting thing, you see, that they don't do it that way. They're not going to give you $20 million. They're going to say, we will give you for the next 20 years $1 million. That's $20 million, right? Like hell it is. That isn't, but that's what they'll do. They'll say, we'll give you $1 million every year. You want $20 million? We'll give you $20 million. We'll give you that $20 million in $1 million payments at the end of every year. And, of course, that kind of makes you sad. But, you know, still, after a year, you're going to get your first payment, okay? Then they're going, oh, by the way, what would you take instead of $1 million every year for 20 years? We could offer you a lump sum now. And so, we could calculate the present value of an annuity. And it would be we'll make it an ordinary annuity. Although, notice this one would probably be an annuity due because they probably make your first payment right away. We'll do it as an annuity. This is where you find out that the formula is really sucky, but the calculator is your buddy. Hit the on button. This is on the TI 83 plus 84 that I'm going to do this. So follow with me while we find out. Now, the one thing we're going to have to do is say, well, what kind of a discount rate are we going to have? We've got to know an interest rate to make this work. So let's say that you could put your money that they're going to give you in the bank and grow it to $20 million after 20 years if you wanted to. So we need an interest rate. So let's take an interest rate. Oh, I don't know. Let's take 6.5% as the discount rate for this annuity. Now, I want you to hit the button apps. And you'll see the very top button is finance. That's the one we'll hit. Do you know why we're going to hit the finance button on this one? Do you know why we're going to hit the finance button? This is a finance course. Do you think I'm going to hit the damn marketing button? Gee, well, anyway. One. Wait a minute, is there a porn button? No. Now, the top one is the TVM solver. That's the time value of money. So you're going to hit enter or type one, key one. Now, they're at the top. We're going to need some information. In this case, we're going to have, let's say that, we'll just leave it this way, that this is annualized compounding. So the first thing you're going to do is the N. In this case, we're going to do 20 times 1. You always do the number of years times the discount rate. Don't do it in your head. Just give it the calculator. It'll do the calculation. Don't worry. Now, you go downstroke to the I, and you put in 6.5. Don't put in the decimal. The calculator will worry about that. Don't do the decimal part. Okay, now, PV is what we want, the present value. So we're going to say, okay, what are the payments that they're offering? $1 million. So you put in $1 million for the PMT. Now, there's going to be no future. A future value here would be like a kicker at the end. There's no kicker. It's just the payments. So you're going to put a zero. Now, for God's sake, it's a zero. See the P over Y and the C over Y. Make sure those are one. And then crucial, because this is where even I screw up if I'm not watching it. Down there at the end where it says end or beginning, that's ordinary or due in that order. Since we're doing an ordinary, you put make sure that it is on the end. Now, all you have to do then is just take it back up to the PV, and you hit the alpha button, and you hit the solve. If I'm reading that right, you would be willing the present value of that ordinary annuity of $1 million a year for 20 years discounted at 6.5% comes out to be $11,018,507.25. Which is kind of surprising, but that is it. By the way, a warning, that negative sign is always going to be there in a present value. If you have to put in a present value for a problem, you have to put in a negative sign. Don't ask me why. It's just always been that way since the first stupid business calculators. Always, you'll get a negative out. Always put a negative in if it's the PV. So in other words, you would be indifferent to getting $1 million a year for 20 years or getting 11 million about right now. They would be about the same if you can put money in the bank at 6.5%. That's what it's saying. And so we create these equivalences between money that's going to happen at stream through a stream in the future and money that happens now. This is the beginning of a lot of things, but let's take us to another problem. Just crank it. Yeah. An 82. Does that have the apps button? Wait a minute. An 82. I was going to say that. I don't know how to. I don't even know how to deal with that. At least it's not an 86. If, huh? I'm trying to think. An 82, it doesn't have the finance button, does it? I think there's actually a facility for the 82 that can do this, though, because there's a way that it's, there's a place in it that can be done. I'm going to have to find out for you. I will. And if nothing else, I mean, they've got them on eBay from very disreputable places. They were probably belonged to someone here before they were stolen. And they got, I mean, I was surprised at how cheap the used ones are getting now because of these later generation ones. And now they've got them as apps on your phone and all that. Does anyone have one of these on as an app on your phone or on your iPad? I found out they're all over the place now. So the physical versions are getting cheap. I might even have a couple in my office I'd rent to you, maybe, at a reasonable price. Remember, I'm Jewish. You know me. You know, $200. A day. But anyway, where the hell was I? I'll see what I can do for you. But one thing is the 89. Do any of you have a TI-89? Yeah. That one's, some of them you got a finance, do you have the finance app on that? I was going to say, because some of them, there was not a finance app, and it was just like a disaster, because you had to do it as a formula. And then there are other ones, too, that can do this. But it's so easy on these calculators nowadays compared to what it used to be. Let's take a practical problem. This has got to be for you. You are going to buy your dream home. It's a real good-looking trailer, Indicator. You know, I've got to stop using Decatur. People really get upset about making jokes about Decatur. My mom's from Decatur. Yes, I know. I saw her in the truck stop. Okay. Your dream home is a double-wide trailer with a double-wide dog and a double-wide woman, and you work as the assistant manager at the Jiffy Lube just up in Springfield. Life is good. You come to me. I am the trailer salesman. My name is Al. Don't you ever call me Al. God. Yes, my name is Al. Don't ever call me that. Al, you want to buy a trailer, huh? Yes, please. What kind do you want? A double wide. Double wide. You married Shirley, didn't you? Uh-huh. She's my sister. Okay. Give you a discount. $80,000. And I'll include some Elvis Velvet paintings in the living room. And I'll make sure that the plunger's put on that toilet. You know, just a big boom boom, the guy who owned it before you. Okay. $80,000. And we'll put you on a 20-year loan for that trailer. And we're going to have an APR on his loan of 8.29%. We're just going to do a real numbers like it, you would actually see it. And this is going to be a 20-year loan, and then it will be monthly payments. So if it's monthly payments, what do you suppose the D is going to be? 12. But we don't even have to really worry too much about that. All we have to worry about is that I'm going to get you that loan. So tell me this. Is that $80,000 a future value or is that a present value?
Present.
Present, because the money is going to go for the loan to buy the home now. So whipping out your calculator and opening it, the finance apps, and taking it through the meat grinder here, you go up to the end. Now, we've got a 20-year loan, but it's going to be 12 monthly payments every year. So you're going to put in 20 times 12. So that's all you have to do is just put in 20 times 12. Now, go down to the I, and you're going to put in 8.29%, but you're going to divide that into 12 periods. Don't calculate it somewhere else. Just put it in 8.29 over 12. That's all you have to do. And then you move on. No. It's as a percent. And that's why they put that little percent there by the I to flag you use a percent. Now, this time, we know the present value. We know how much the loan is going to come off at right now. So we would key in negative $80,000. Now ignore the PMT for a second. Now there's no kicker on it. Go on down, make sure 1-1, and the payments come at the end of every period, so it's an annuity of an ordinary variety. Now go back up there to the PMT. And say, alpha, solve. My ass, what did that do that? Alpha, solve. So there you go. Your monthly payments are going to be $683.66. $683.66. There you go. You can calculate your own payments now. I'm going to tell you a little about that real quick here. One of the ways that we, in banking, that they decide whether you're going to get a loan or not is by saying your monthly take-home pay, and they'll say the payment cannot be more than a certain percentage of that monthly take-home pay. And that's the way it worked with car loans, home loans, and it depends. Back there was a time when they'd say 25%, 33%, but they'll say this monthly payment can't be more than 25% of your income for the month. So if you are going to say, I make $2,500 in take-home money a month, then they would say, the loan company would say, because you're under the threshold for this amount. And that's how you can tell if you've got something like a dream car that you want to borrow money on. You can say, okay, here's how it's got to be done. I'm going to calculate how much my loan payments would be, and I'm going to just straight up ask them, what percentage can't I exceed of my monthly take-home pay? They'll probably tell you, and then you can say, okay, are they going to approve the loan based upon this payment and my take-home pay? This way you can calculate your payments, and you can also ask yourself realistically, can I afford this? Let me take you down to another one here. Another realistic place where this would happen is to say, I want to buy a home, and I'm planning to do this, let's say, in 5 years. Now, I don't want to go in 100% on a loan. They probably wouldn't let me. So I'm going to need a down payment on my home. Now, I'm figuring, let's say, I want to buy you, madam. Give me a price for a home that you would consider worthy of you in 5 years. Good. That's actually realistic. $180,000 to $200,000. Unless we get a real bad price increase. That's reasonable, nice house, and you know all that. You can keep a torture chamber in the basement. The good stuff. Okay, so we've got $180,000. Let's say that we want to put down 20% on that home. If you were able to do that, then you wouldn't have to pay that mortgage insurance. That would save you money if you were able to hit that 80% loan-to-value ratio. So let's say on a $180,000 loan, I want to be able to put down $36,000 in 5 years. And I would say, how much would I have to put in the bank every month out of my paycheck, with complete discipline, not messing around with it, how much would I have to put in the bank every month out of my paycheck so that in 5 years, starting with my next paycheck, so it's an ordinary annuity, so that in 5 years, I could walk into a bank and I could say, I've got 20% of the money that I need to buy this $180,000 house I like. They'd probably be, oh, are you kidding, really? They'd probably love you for that one. But that's realistically, this is where real financial planning, short-term for people your age, or a little bit, just a little bit beyond where you are now, gets real, is these plans for down the road a little ways. So what we're wanting to do here is this a present value or is this a future value? Yeah, this is a future, you're right. And there's going to be no PV kicker, so the PV on this one is going to be zero. You're not putting in a lump at the beginning to start the ball rolling. You're just going to see what your payments would have to be to achieve this. So let's go back up to that Apps Finance TVM Solver. Now the N here, we're going to do this every month. So in this case, every month. So we would want to say 5 years times 12. Whoops. 5 years times 12 would be, and it doesn't matter, just say 5 times 12. So in other words, you're going to put in 60 payments. You go down. Now the I percentage, let's say that we've got a bank that we can put money in, and we're going to put money in at 6.59%. We're in some kind of an annuity kind of CD. We can put the money in. So what we'll do is we'll put in 6.59% divided by 12, because there will be 12 payments a month. The compoundings will be the number of payments in these kinds of tricks. Okay, always. The compoundings will be the number of payments a year. And now the PV on it is going to be zero because I'm not going to put any money in up front. But the future value will be $36,000. Now, I make sure everything else is clean, the 1-1, and it's at the end of every month. So I go back up now to the payment, and I hit Alpha Solve. And I get, if I can read this, I would have to put in $508.20 per month to achieve this. Now that would require an awful lot of discipline because $500, yeah, there's a whole lot of fun I can have with that. Noms, stuff like that. But that's how you would do it. To say, if I have this goal and this is a goal I achieve, this is exactly how you would calculate it. We'll keep on going with this on Thursday. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.